And we're going to pick up in the second chapter, verses 18 to 20. What use is an idol once its maker has shaped it, a cast image, a teacher of lies? For its maker trusts in what has been made, though the product is only an idol that cannot speak. Alas, for you who say to wood, wake up, silent stone, rouse yourself. Can it teach? See, it is gold and silver plated, and there is no breath in it at all. But the Lord is in his holy temple. Let all the earth keep silence before him. Friends, this is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. So last week you got my first thoughts when Trilby gave me this passage that doesn't exist in the Bible. And this week, you're going to get my responses to when she told me why she wanted this. And Mads has a little video of the email conversation back and forth between Trilby and myself. What if we wrote this? Why is this book so short? My Bible doesn't have a Habakkuk 4, 7 through 12. Mine ends in chapter 3. Maybe you should use my Bible. What might be in the Trilby Bible at the end of Habakkuk? Ode to ice cream. So I wrote Psalm 154, an ode to ice cream. And that is how these things sort of happen. Somebody asks a question, we go exploring. Trilby is going to regret this because I will probably talk longer than it would take us to read the entire book of Habakkuk today, let alone the fact that we've done it for 2 weeks in a row. Habakkuk is a really interesting character. Most of us have not spent any time in his book. The time this spring in the Minor Prophets study, the Old Testament Prophets study, and this summer is going to be more time than most of us will spend in a lifetime in Habakkuk. But here we go. He's an interesting character. He's the 6th century BC. He's actually considered a prophet in Judaism, in Christianity, and in Islam. So he's kind of a big deal for somebody we never bother to read his book. I mean, he is in the Bible, after all. And what he does in three chapters is address not doctrine so much, but the experience of being a person of faith, being a part of a community of faith as a significant part of your life. He's not doing what Paul does in the letter to Romans and trying to outline all of his theology in detail. He's trying to describe what it is to be a person who follows our God. He actually does remarkably well in just three chapters. The scholars debate whether chapter 3 was added later or not. So he may actually do it in only two chapters, which is even more impressive. And frankly, it's only three chapters. There's no reason we don't read this more often. He starts off with the experience of Israel that is also an experience most of us live out at some point in our faith journey. How long, O Lord? How long is it going to be like this? And the this can be filled with lots of things. It's Habakkuk is post-exilic, so they've been in exile and they've come back. So he knows that those things end, but how long? How long is it going to take? How long are we going to be in the wilderness, Moses? How long are we going to be enslaved in Egypt, O Lord? How long are we going to be in Babylon? How long is this chemo going to take? The slightly more familiar from the backseat of the family vacation mobile. Are we there yet? the plaintive cry of, how long will it take till I get a job? How long will it be until we can start a family? How long will it be till I find the person I'm supposed to live with and spend my life with? How long will it be until the school bell rings 3 o'clock and we can go home? Well, those are all aspects of the life of faith. We wait. We spend a lot of time wondering why we're waiting in the faith journey. So he addresses that right off the bat. And then he goes on and he gets bigger. How long am I going to have to stare at atrocities? How long am I going to have to see wrongdoing done in front of me? How long is there not going to be any justice? How long are people going to be hungry? There's a cartoon that floats around the internet that has a conversation between two people saying, every now and then I want to ask God why God allows poverty and evil and injustice and conflict and war and hunger. The other person says, well, why don't you? The first person says, because I'm afraid God will ask me the same question. And Habakkuk is definitely enmeshed in those questions of faith. Why is there no justice? Why aren't things the way they should be? And verse 5 here is actually Habakkuk yelling at God, hey, pay attention. If you were watching what's happening down here, you would be astounded, and not in a good way. More in the sense of your toddler has gotten a hold of a Sharpie and is drawing on the walls sort of way. There's a mighty work being done down here, but it's not what you would have us do, O Lord. And I think many of us at points along our faith journey, or maybe before we knew we were on a faith journey, have shouted out, it's not fair. Or we've uttered the words, well, I guess that's just how the world works. Even though we know it's not how the world should work or is supposed to work, we have resigned ourselves to that this is just sort of how it works. And it stinks, but what are we going to do about it? It stinks. And so Habakkuk is giving cry to that, hey, God, it's not the way it should be down here. Help us out. How long? How long? How long? Chapter 2 brings up one of those sermon things that we get brought up an awful lot. We're going to talk about worshiping other idols. Have you ever heard that sermon before? Maybe like 3 times this year already? And Habakkuk does something fascinating with it, because if we're honest, most of us know that other things get in the way an awful lot in life. But Habakkuk speaks directly to idols. There's this little bit in there that I didn't include because I was afraid I'd lose you all laughing, where he essentially says, the cut-off pieces of that wood carving that you then used as firewood to cook your steak, does that make your steak holy? But here he asks the question of his people, of himself, and of us. Why do we turn to things of stone and wood and expect them to be alive? Expect them to have answers for us? Expect them to be as powerful and as wonderful and as wondrous as our God? And he's pointing out that these are statues, these are carvings. They're painted, they're silver, they're gold, they're wood, they're stone, but they're not alive. And that is a fundamental piece of our faith, is that we worship a living God. Our God is alive. And, you know, fast forward, that's the whole point of Easter on a certain level, isn't it? mean, so our God is alive. And Habakkuk pushes them and us to think about what it means that those things don't speak and they don't breathe. When we tell that creation narrative in Genesis, God's breath into us, into humanity, is what makes us live. The Hebrew word for it is wind or breath or spirit, any of those. They all share a word. And so we end up with this question of why are we, and this harkens back to Easter, looking for the power of the living God among the dead stone and the dead wood and the dead silver and the dead gold. To put this in a 21st century context, how many of you talk to your computer or your cell phone when it doesn't do what you want it to do? Why do you talk to silicon and glass and microprocessors and RAM when they are not alive and they do not breathe and they do not have the power of God? And then Habakkuk flips it with the last line, but God is alive in God's temple. It isn't that God isn't around and we've turned to these things because God isn't showing up. God is still there, and somehow we've decided that stone and wood and gold and silver make better things. I'm sure that's never happened to any of us. Habakkuk is really getting at the core of what it means to be a person of faith, is that we have these ups and these downs and these struggles. The call to worship today was from the third chapter of Habakkuk in the Message. And it's talking about, even though the strawberries are rotten, which I've had happen in my fridge, I'm ashamed to admit, because I love strawberries. And even though the apples are wormy, that is not a reason to say that God isn't real or alive or doesn't care. But how often do we make it, my God, it's raining today and I had a day off and God just doesn't like me. Right? I mean, we put whether God exists into so many tiny little boxes. My baseball team lost. My basketball team lost. It rained on my birthday. I didn't get a pony for my birthday when I was 12. And Habakkuk is reminding us that it's not those things that tell us that God doesn't exist. It is those moments when God is most with us, and we need to be reminded of that. Any Christian bookstore you go into, you're going to be able to buy a copy of a poster with that Footsteps poem on it, right? And it'll probably have this vision of two sets of footprints going in the sand down the beach in the distance, and it'll be very beautiful and things. And that was when I carried you. That when the footprints go from two pairs to one, the human asks God, why did you leave me? And God's response in that poem is, I didn't leave you. That's when I carried you. There has since become a cottage industry of things kind of mocking that. And that long line in the sand over there, that's where I dragged you kicking and screaming. Our assumption is that God leaves us when things get hard. That's our assumption. And Habakkuk is pointing out that it's flawed. When things go rancid, when our life goes rotten, that is when we most need to be reminded of who God is. Now, he's hit most of the high points in the faith journey. He's hit several of the low points in the faith journey. And in chapter 3, the other thing he does is to have this image of God as a mighty warrior who ride in and fix all of our problems. And in Sunday school, we kind of talked how that's the both the expectation of Jesus as the Messiah for those who were waiting for him, is that he would come in and just throw Rome out on their ear and solve all of their problems with military might. So maybe this is where they get some of that. But also, that's how we dream. We dream for the miraculous, the big, the mighty, the powerful moment. How many of us have thought, well, I could solve all my problems if I just won the lottery? Not I could solve all my problems if I just save $10 a week, right? I mean, saving $10 a week is boring. Winning the lottery, now let's talk about that. I'm assuming all of you would tithe, just for the record. We like home runs at the ballpark. We like dramatic finishes in our movies and our books. We like the big picture. We like the dramatic. And we're often not patient enough for the small fixes that solve things along the way. We're just not that patient. I'm not that patient. And so that description, that's us too. We want God to just swoop in and fix it, don't we? So that by the end of the day, by the end of the TV episode, by the end of our prayer time, we've allotted God 7 minutes this morning, all of our problems will be solved. That's what we want. And let's be honest, that's how we behave like it should work. But that's not how it works. And so Habakkuk gets at that as well. And I think for us, the gift that we have from Habakkuk, that prophet with too many K's in his name, is that 2,600 years later, we're still reading his stuff. Well, okay, it's still in the Bible. Maybe we're not still reading it, but it's still in the Bible. And we have his witness to his faith journey, which speaks to our faith journeys. And it's still somehow incredibly relevant to the challenges we have in faith. I don't know of many other things that have lasted 2,600 years and are still incredibly relevant. Okay, beer is on the list, but that gets at another piece of our faith, is to be willing to describe the high points and the low points so that other people can know that they are not alone when they go through this. When I read that very second verse, the first part that's actually Habakkuk, and said, "How long, O Lord? How long?" How many of you had an emotional response to that prayer? All I have to do is say, "How long, O Lord?" I don't need 25 pages about the theology of where God is in the suffering of humanity. I just need to say, "How long?" And if you've been there, you know. You know what it is to sit in the waiting room and wonder. You know what it is to wait for a phone call or an email or a text that never comes. You know what it is to struggle and wait and wait and wait and wait and wait. What Habakkuk does so beautifully here is he encapsulates those things, not in doctrine, but in lived experience and in the power of our own emotions, the power of our own stories that is still common to us today. So I would encourage you, go home, read all three chapters. You don't have to read the fourth chapter. It's not in the book. And consider, how you can encapsulate what it is you believe about God without doing the doctrine thing. What is your experience of our God? And how does that need to be told to a world that still looks an awful lot like what Habakkuk decries in the first chapter? What about justice? What about hunger? What about the rich robbing the poor? What about the arrogant? What about the powerful? What about any of it? What about all of it? Do you need to share with us and with the larger community about how God is present even in all of that? To God alone be the glory this day and forevermore. Amen.